The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this January 29th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. A overcast day, but not too bad in the Auburn Opelika area, with tons to get to on today's show. Basketball heavy today as Auburn gets a nice win last night against the Texas Longhorns. We'll talk about that, why it was important, how they can build on it into this weekend, plus big games around the league, around the country as well, and a couple of great guests as well. Christian, happy Thursday, sir. How are you?
Happy Thursday. Is it still weird for you? I heard you do the open, and you said 29th, 2026, and it still took me a second to...
Yeah, I know. It also doesn't flow as well.
It didn't feel right.
You know, January 29th, 2025. Yeah. Like, it doesn't. 2026.
Didn't necessarily feel the same, but had a little bit of.
February is Sunday.
Golly.
Sunday is February 1. We're almost 1/12th of the way through this year already. That's scary.
That is a little bit scary to have to think about. You know what else is a scary thing about playing this Auburn Tigers team right now? As you mentioned, it Auburn bounces back, or fights back rather, from a first half barrage from the Texas Longhorns. They come back and win it 88-82 using a dominant second half performance. We're going to talk all about this contest, both pregame, both during the game, and postgame in there as well. We have some historic numbers that we would like to share with you here today when we talk about this game, when we talk about the second half, and when we talk about just the game as a whole. You mentioned Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us at 2:30 to recap Auburn's four-game win streak, the offense continuing to click, winning games in different ways than you've won the previous games. And how much confidence does that continue to bring to your program? Also want to highlight the defensive efforts for a lot of these guys here last night. We'll talk about our way that we have described this Auburn basketball team as a whole, or at least up to this point, and it's Keyshawn and Tahad and then the other five. And then by no means is that a negative thing, but it's the what can you get from those other five guys, and you get another great performance from those five individuals last night. All of that coming up here in hour number one, and a really fun conversation to start hour number two as we dive into some of the quotes from Stephen Pearl and from some of the players last night that should be really, really fun here this afternoon.
Yep, and so until we get to our guests before, after, and before again, phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of today's show, you absolutely can. We encourage it this afternoon on the phone lines at 334-321-1390. That's the call-in number. Again, 334-321-1390. You could call in, give us your thoughts on Auburn taking down Texas last night inside of Neville Arena, 88-82 final score. Give us a call or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Your thoughts or a quick hitter or two in the On the Line text box. And that's where we begin today's show. 88-82, Auburn beats Texas in Neville Arena. And Auburn is the hottest team in the SEC. Four-game win streak dating back to the Missouri loss, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, right? You had the ugly South Carolina win, the win on the road at Ole Miss, the win on the road at Florida, and now a nice win over a scrappy Texas team. And I think a lot of Auburn fans learned that about the Longhorns last night.
They did. Again, it's a team that we talked a lot about, and Daryl in the studio talked a lot about as well of, man, this team is so much better than what the record shows, than what their SEC record shows, because yes, you were 3-4 going into this contest as a Longhorn, but your three wins were over three really good teams. One of them was on the road at Alabama, and one of those teams that really played up or plays up to their competition. And when they play one of these top 25 teams or they go on the road, they really seem to amp everything up. And it's exactly what you saw in the first half, shooting well beyond what they usually do from behind the three-point line, just from the field goal perspective as well. Actually ended up playing really, really good defense for the first 17 minutes of that first half. And then you asked the question to Sean Miller last night, and you feel like that's kind of the way that you could describe this game as a whole. The phrase, the law of averages.
Yeah.
Everything kind of worked its way back to what you were expecting to see in this game. The second half, just, my goodness, you saw a tale of two halves for both teams, and Auburn felt like they could do no wrong.
Yeah, and you feel like with how Auburn plays compared to how Texas plays, and then what Stephen Pearl said to us in the post-game press conference, someone asked him, kind of the similar question that I asked Sean Miller was asked to Stephen Pearl about, did you change anything defensively at halftime? Did you guys fix anything or make any adjustments? Or were you just waiting on them to cool off? And he said, we didn't change anything. He said, we were waiting on them to chill out and cool off from behind the arc because Texas was taking the shots that Auburn wanted them to. That's what was fascinating, was Stephen Pearl talked about, yeah, we played the way we wanted to play. They did what we wanted them to do. They just made shots that they haven't been making this year other than the Heidi kid who had a good night and shoots 50% from the three-point line.
Yeah.
But he said no. He said, I trusted my gut that it would come back down to earth, and it did. And Auburn, I mean, it was a tale of two halves. Texas played great offensively. Auburn played terrible. Then in the second half, Auburn played great offense, and Texas did not. That was the story of the game, and Auburn was 6 points better last night.
I don't think humbling, it may not be the correct word, but we put ourselves, and as do all fans, into the shoes or into the seats of head coaches, right? And how, I'll use humbling, how humbling is it to understand that jumping to conclusions and jumping to immediate changes, as all fans do, isn't the right way to always go about things. And then you hear a head coach like Stephen Pearl last night saying, yeah, at halftime, I told our team that we should be down 20 rather than being down 8. And everybody talks about it of, man, just keep playing good defense. These shots aren't going to fall. Well, you live in a day and age where it very easily could in a second half where those shots could continue to fall. But humbling just from the standpoint of everybody would want to go and change their defensive game plan completely.
Yeah.
But hearing a head coach say, no, we stuck to our game plan. We stuck to what we felt like was going to work. You mentioned Dalen Swain, who, again, was one of the main highlights of this Texas team. He's on the top of every single scouting report. We talked about him, of how he's probably going to get his. You just can't make sure that he doesn't go crazy and nobody else can go crazy too. Well, he ended up still going crazy. He had 30, but we'll get to these in a little bit. Plenty of other guys did not do that. And so, but he was 4 of 7 from behind the arc. He was 3 of 3, I believe, at halftime, and he's a 29% three-point shooter. And Steven's saying, you know, those are all contested looks, too. And so what are you truly going to do? This team started 7 of 10 from behind the three-point line to Texas. They finished 3 of 14. Shows that law of averages. Shows how easy it is as fans to jump to conclusions and want these immediate changes. But the coaches that see the full film, that see the full game plan, that spend 3 or 4 days working on what they want to work on, understands if you continue to do things the right way, things are going to end up falling in your favor. And my goodness, does that work for the same way for Auburn behind the three-point line, where it has not been pretty? I believe I did math in the postgame. I believe it was 9 of 51 over your last three games during this win streak. For Auburn, it was 2 of 17, 2 of 19, and then 5 of 15. I think you came to life from behind the three-point line.
Yeah.
Did this Auburn team, and again, a lot of those came in that second half.
And a lot of them came off of good looks, too.
Great
which
looks.
Is something Steven has talked about several times. I know Daryl shared the story with you last Wednesday about his one-on-one conversation with Steven Pearl, who then doubled down last night in the post-game presser saying, look, I want my guys to shoot the three. I want them to shoot these shots if they're there, but shoot good shots, not forced shots, not contested shots, not end of shot clock shots, right? And I asked Kevin Overton in reference to that quote from his head coach, I said, what does that look like for you? What does a good three look like for you and this team? And he gave a fascinating answer. He talked about not shooting on the run, not shooting fading one way or the other, or fading away from the basket, or with a hand in your face, or at the end of the clock. He said it's when the ball is moving, when you're in rhythm. He talked about Keyshawn Hall, said just when it feels natural, when it feels right, those are good threes. And Auburn has proven that they are a good shooting team when those things happen. This is not a good team when they're forcing shots.
No.
And most teams aren't good when you force things. But this team in particular has shown they can't win and score the amount of points they need to win when they're forcing it and beating themselves, really. But they didn't do that last night, especially in the second half. You had 25 points from Keyshawn Hall in the second half. Kevin Overton goes for 25 for the game. And Auburn gets a solid win. Man, that's a Texas team. Excuse me. That's a Texas team that their record is not good. Okay, they're now 12-9 on the season, 3-5 in SEC play. But that's a team that has beat Alabama, has beat Vanderbilt, and has beat Georgia. And a team that you do not want to see on your schedule. You don't want to see them in the regular season. You don't want to see them in Nashville. And God forbid that team get hot and find a way to the NCAA tournament. I'm not picking against them, at least in a round one game where they could be a 9 seed and taking on the 8 seed. Heck no. That's a Texas team that has every chance to be good, and you saw that with some of the stats from their guys last night.
We talked about it, too, about Auburn's fast break points. We talked about it yesterday and how I believe they had a dozen of them in Gainesville taking on Florida, especially, again, when you dive into a lot of these numbers in the second half, which is where we're going to spend a lot of our focus here throughout the show. Auburn only had 2 fast break points, yet you scored 54 points in that second half. You were 22 of 28 from the free throw line and really just exposed your will on the offensive end of the floor, so much so you averaged 1.929 points per possession.
Which is stupid for people that don't know.
You average, again, if you shoot 40%, that is halfway decent in a college or NBA game where you're scoring, what, I mean, you're scoring, again, 40% of the time at best. You almost scored 2 points every single time you brought the ball across half court.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
That's ridiculous. That's not normal. That's not average. That's not how that's supposed to go. And so Auburn and their offense, again, in the second half, should be rewarded, should be celebrated for that.
You were 24 of 28 in the second half.
Good Lord.
Possession-wise.
Right.
Scoring, obviously a couple missed shots, but offensive rebounds. But on 28 possessions that you had in that second half, you scored on 24 of them.
Against an athletic team like Texas, I'm not going to go out and say they're the greatest defensive team I've ever seen. And Sean Miller, as he did before the game, he scolded his team after the game, saying, we just can't defend without fouling. I mean, and they can't, man. Auburn is number one in the nation at free throws attempted, which we talked about this in the preview yesterday with Double D in studio, how that could be something Auburn uses to their advantage, and they absolutely did. But my God, Texas fouls like crazy.
And it was, there were a couple times we were sitting up there watching the game of, Why did you foul there?
Yeah.
That is not a good foul. As Auburn's trying to go on a little bit of a run, it's a 5-point Auburn lead, and all of a sudden there's a really bad shot, but gets bailed out, and you go to the free throw line. Now all of a sudden it's an 8-point game.
Well, wasn't Auburn in the bonus with like 13 minutes to play in the second half?
Yeah.
That's horrible. That's bad. That's really bad.
And I know we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about it. You're in the same boat I am, as was just about everybody in that post-game press conference. Major shout-out, major respect to Sean Miller for the way that he handled us, the way that he handled the room professionally, really dove into answers or questions with answers. Again, the fact that we're at a day and age where it's just of, man, being treated like a professional, getting eye contact, being able to ask a question about his team not performing well and not feeling like you asked a question that couldn't be asked.
Yeah.
And that sounds unfair, but it's a two-way street because half the time reporters don't necessarily ask the best questions on you've seen coaches blow up on those types of guys. But, man, the way that he dove into answers about his team, talking about fouling, talking about how much better they are offensively than defensively, and that's something that he's talked with his team a lot about. That being said, in an SEC that's so wide open, being able to take it with a grain of salt and take every day for a new day, continuing to get better and better. I know you're in this same boat. I mean, he's gained a fan from me just based off of the way that he handled himself. He handled the press conference, and he handled just, again, the way that he handled professionals as professionals.
Yeah, I thought he had good answers. I thought he was very attentive. And I know he gets a bad rap, but no, I thought he gave great answers and was engaged. And best of luck to him and his team moving forward.
And I guess finalizing that point of talking about the free throw line, because on social media, that was obviously the biggest conversation, the biggest complaint from the Texas fans of, wow, you look at the free throw line, there's no way. There was no sort of excuse that you could sometimes throw as a little bit of a jab of, well, when you go on the road, you know you're not going to get the whistle. He understands how badly his team fouled, and he said that we fouled the you-know-what out of everybody. And credit to that team, credit to how good Auburn was. And he gave them a lot of complaints, saying that team is so much better than they were to start the year. And Stephen Pearl doubled that as well.
Yeah. Auburn with a big win last night against the Texas Longhorns. Win streak up to 4, 88-82. Final score. Auburn now prepares for Tennessee on Saturday. A really unique game for Stephen Pearl. He returns to the place he played college basketball, and now the head coach of the Auburn Tigers. So very exciting for that game. We'll talk more about this game, about Auburn's win, and more as the show goes on. But want to pivot just a hair from our plan, Christian, because Samford has added on to the tampering allegations for the Ole Miss Rebels. We'll talk about that and what that means when we come back. Just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and I need to make a clarification. I misspoke. It happens, okay? I consider myself a semi-pro. I wouldn't say I'm a pro. Semi-pro at best.
You were college. Now you're semi-professional.
Yeah, yeah.
With your NIL deals.
But I can still come back to college if I need to, if it doesn't work out, if I left too early.
If you had a chance to make more.
Yeah, yeah. If I have a chance to make more or play, then I do hold the right to come back. But I said it was Samford. I completely misspoke. It was completely incorrect, even though I was looking right at the story in the article. Fresno State, they're both the Bulldogs for what it's worth. So,
almost as bad as me yesterday of reading the word recused probably a dozen times and genuinely thinking that it said rescued, even so much so to where my Google history asks, what is being rescued in law terms?
It's okay. On a different program, I said that a basketball player had a wingspan of 6'12". rather than, you know,
seven feet.
Yeah. So we're not perfect, but
I think it's an equal comparison. I mean,
I think so. Fresno State has now jumped in with Clemson and turning in information to the NCAA. There was a stink bug on me. That scared the crap out of me. That was on my neck. I was like, what is? I thought I was fixing my shirt. God, I hate those things.
It scared me.
It scared the crap out of me, dude. It was crawling on my... Ugh. All right.
I saw you spiked the air.
I got him, though. He gone. Okay, let's try this again. Can we play the return music again and just start this segment over? Nice. Okay, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And good news or breaking news or some news out of college athletics. Fresno State has joined Clemson in turning in information and accusing the Ole Miss Rebels of tampering. We remember the Dabo rant. I guess it wasn't a rant. It was more so of saying, hey, Ole Miss is tampering with my guys. Do something about it.
Yeah, during a two-hour press conference.
I had my thoughts on that. But Fresno State said, huh, Dabo spoke up about it. I think we'd like to do the same. And they have information that they have turned over to the NCAA, who is now investigating another instance of tampering with Pete Golding, his staff, and the Ole Miss Rebels. Allegedly, according to Fresno State and a reporter in on this situation, NCAA investigators have been working with Fresno State to look into allegedly an Ole Miss staff member who made improper contact and tampered with Fresno State's leading receiver, Josiah Freeman, a guy that had 52 catches, over 600 yards, and 6 touchdowns a year ago. Not only has Fresno State said, yeah, he's tampering, they're calling our guys when they're not supposed to, Josiah Freeman, the receiver, turned in screenshots to the NCAA. Whoops.
It's hard to say that's just verbal accusations when the player himself walks up and goes, wait, Your Honor, look at this.
This is bad news for Ole Miss, man. This is really bad news for Ole Miss. And I had my thoughts about Dabo where I said, I think this is when you had left for a basketball game late last week, where I said the fact that he's just now like figuring out that this is going on is kind of sad and he needs to get with the times. Not saying that it's okay. I'm saying accept the fact that this is how it is.
Right.
But I did also command him for speaking up and trying to create change. This very well could be the result of that.
Well, it's exactly what we've talked about of, man, it takes one legitimate person that's respected by college football officials and college football coaches to step up and say, all right, we're done.
Enough is enough.
This is not happening anymore. So maybe this could be a little bit of that revolution or that rebellion against this crazy world of tampering. Again, this all started from last Friday when he publicly accused Ole Miss and first-year head coach Pete Golding of blatant tampering with the Clemson linebacker from Cal, Luke Ferrelli, who signed with Clemson and was there for a week right before the transfer portal closed, said, you know what? I'm going to go talk with compliance, and I want to re-enter my name into the portal, and that evening signed with Ole Miss. Dabo says, quote, there's tampering, and then there's blatant tampering. And I like what he said here. Tampering 101 is when you're talking to kids who aren't in the portal. Tampering 201 is when you've already negotiated deals with kids who are not in the portal. Tampering 301 is when you've got a kid who's going into the portal to sign somewhere, move there, going to class, and then you're texting them while they're in class. That's a whole nother level of tampering.
Yeah.
And this falls right into a little bit of all of those. Again, with Josiah Freeman, the Fresno State wide receiver number one, who did not enter the portal, but has plenty of screenshots to show the Ole Miss Rebels doing everything they can.
He did actually enter.
He did enter. Okay.
He did actually enter the portal, but this was all going on
beforehand.
That happened.
Okay.
Yes. The quote from an official and a source within this situation, because I didn't think he entered the portal either, but this article says that he did. So they're claiming that this all happened before he entered the portal.
Is he at Ole Miss?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's committed anywhere.
Okay.
I looked it up and I didn't see anything. But he had a season-ending injury in 2024. He was able to get an extra year of eligibility from the NCAA this past season. So he has one more year. But here's the quote from a source within the situation, around the situation. They say, quote, Fresno State has receipts. Brother.
It's kind of badass.
It is. It is pretty sweet. Pete Golding's in trouble, man. Pete Golding is in big trouble. Our friend Trey Wallace, friend of the show at OutKick, retweeted the story article a couple of hours ago and says, we are living in a simulation. Ole Miss had to try and prevent Lane Kiffin from taking key players to LSU through tampering. And now the Rebels are being investigated by the NCAA for tampering with other players under their new head coach.
What? No way.
Yeah. Bad news bears for the Ole Miss Rebels, man. They're not cheating, though. The sport's not broken. Everything's fine. Everything's going to be okay. And look at Dabo. Maybe, wouldn't that be a full circle moment for him to be the reason that it all comes crashing down? Good stuff, man. We'll talk more Auburn basketball, football, and more with Brad Law next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we get to the phone lines for our first guest of the day, a guy that has joined us on the phone lines this day, this time, for quite some time now. We appreciate him being such a big part of our program. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network joins us now. Brad, hope everything is good in your world and crossover season quickly approaching once again, my friend.
It's coming, and it really never ends with Tiger Talk going on. We got another one tonight. Hope everyone is making plans to be out at Baumhauer's tonight at 6 to grab a little dinner and a show before women's basketball at 8.
Yes, there is so much going on. You mentioned Tiger Talk, women's basketball, of course, men's basketball last night, coming up again on Saturday. And then baseball, I mean, we're what, less than a month away now from Auburn baseball getting started on the plains.
Less than a month away, boy, one of the most anticipated. It's hard to think back to a year that was more anticipated than this one, with all of the returners and the young talent that made such an impact last year, and a lot of hunger with this team, given the way it ended last season. So love it, and can't wait to dive in. And you know, it's fun to dive into it. It's fun to take it one game at a time too.
So will it be kind of what you guys have done in the past with at the network, where you'll kind of get baseball season started while Andy's wrapping up basketball, and then he'll join you back full-time in the booth with you guys?
Yeah, when Andy is available to do baseball, he will do baseball. And then as long as there's crossover with basketball and that's a conflict, then I'll either go solo or we'll have folks in with me for that. But yeah, we'll kind of plan that the same way we've done the last several years.
Auburn basketball, baseball, football, all over on Wings 94.3 here locally in Auburn Opelika. Women's basketball here on ESPN 106.7 tonight, hosting South Carolina. So that'll be a big-time trip or a big-time game for the Auburn women. But let's talk about the Auburn men for a little bit, Brad, because last night was fun inside of Neville Arena. Didn't look that way for the first 20 minutes. Second 20 minutes were a whole different story, and Auburn picks up a six-point win over Texas.
Yeah, you always have to sort of note when a team is doing something against its tendencies, when a team is doing something it doesn't normally do. For instance, if a team is shooting, say, 45% from three, but they start a game 1-for-10, you go, uh-oh, let's hope we have a big lead, because they're not going to shoot 1-for-10 the entire game. They shoot 40%. Well, it's kind of the reverse of that from Texas. They hit about 33% of their threes, and they made 7 of their first 10. And so it was really easy to go, this is trouble. But sort of your, you know, conventional reasoning would tell you they're not going to hit 70% for the game. And if they do, like, all right, you just move on. It was that kind of night. But they didn't. They started 7 of 10, and they finished significantly worse than that. And then Auburn's offense really started to move well. And one of the most efficient performances that I can ever remember seeing. Like, for the last 24 minutes of the game, Auburn missed five shots. In the last 24 and a half minutes of the game, Auburn missed five shots. That's ridiculous. They averaged 1.9 points per possession in the second half. That's ridiculous. And as a result, you beat a really good team, a team that, you know, has three wins over ranked teams in SEC play so far and has played well on the road. And Auburn was able to take care of it. I thought you saw a lot out of this team last night.
Four straight wins for the Auburn Tigers. You mentioned 1.9 points per possession, tied a program low of only three turnovers in the contest. I remember we talked last week, Brad, about Auburn from three and the struggles. They were 9 of 51 during this three-game win streak, but really used their physicality down low to kind of set that offensive identity. What does it mean? I mean, my goodness, when you see a team like Auburn shoot 21 threes, they make 11 of them on your home floor, and then you add that physicality down low with Sway and Keyshawn Murphy and Filip Jovic.
Yeah, it's interesting because Auburn made 11 threes. 11 for 21, so still almost half of their shot attempts came from three. But again, they were efficient. They were just so efficient. Now, look, when Kevin Overton goes 5 for 7, that helps. But if you take his away, the rest of the team went 6 for 14. That's not a bad percentage, by the way. That's higher than most teams' average in SEC play. So they took good shots, and they made those shots. And they didn't let guys who don't need to be taking a lot of shots take a lot of threes in that game. I think you've seen over these last three games, at Ole Miss, at Florida, and now home against Texas, Auburn has won games in different ways, either in the paint, at the foul line, with the help of some big-time three-point shooting. I mean, it'll win the game without Elijah Freeman's three and Overton's five threes and Keyshawn Hall's three threes. I mean, these guys – and the bank, the one that banked in from Murph. So, to be able to win games in different ways, that's what you have to do if you want to try to compete for a championship in this conference.
Auburn has won four games in a row, five of their last six. They are in the middle of the toughest stretch of the season. They have at Tennessee on Saturday, midweek off, then Alabama at home, Vanderbilt at home, and then on the road at Arkansas. We're talking with Brad Law for the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7. And as we flip our attention to Tennessee this Saturday, a little bit of a quicker turnaround because of the Wednesday midweek, but a night game against Tennessee in Thompson Bowling. That place is weird, man. We've seen Auburn win big games, and we've seen them lose big games on the road in Knoxville. Your evaluation of what this Rick Barnes team will bring for Auburn on Saturday?
I think they're still trying to figure out who they are a little bit the same way that Auburn's still figuring out its identity, but it is the top scoring defensive team in the league. They're the only team that gives up fewer than 70 points per game on average. It's close with Kentucky and Florida and Ole Miss, but it's close. They give up 69.8 points per game, and they're going to be a tough team defensively. They're going to be a team where valuing the ball again is going to be critical. It's not realistic to think that Auburn can go have back-to-back games with three turnovers, especially when you're going on the road to the top scoring defensive team in the conference. But can you minimize the damage after turnovers? Can you minimize the turnovers, number one, but then minimize the damage afterwards? The defense that Auburn played and its points off turnovers and that differential was one of the two key stat differences in the game last night. I mean, Texas shot 52% and 46% from three. That's enough. That's enough to win almost every ball game. But Auburn was plus 11 at the free throw line, and they were plus 11 in points off of turnovers. They didn't just force 11 turnovers. They turned them into 18 points. Tennessee's really good at forcing turnovers and then turning those into points. So they're going to grind it out. They want to make you play defense for the entire shot clock. and try to get a better shot, and then they want to wear you down and make you run your offense for the entire shot clock and then make you settle for a shot that you don't want to take. They're very good, very skilled at that as a Rick Barnes team. So I expect relatively low scoring and every possession to be at a premium.
We have Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network with us here on the phone lines. Brad, at Tennessee, which we're talking about, then the no midweek game, that midweek bye, then Alabama, Vanderbilt, and at Arkansas. Three of your next four games against ranked teams, three of your next five games are on the road. What does a successful four or a five-game stretch for this Auburn Tiger team look like as you hit the back half of SEC play?
No, I decline. 1-0, one at a time, especially in this stretch.
Now,
sure. I mean, what I'll say is these last three in particular, going to win on the road at Ole Miss and at Florida, I think gives you as a fan some psychological wiggle room with these tough games coming up. I mean, you could drop a couple of these and still find yourself contending for the double bye in the SEC tournament, and if some other games fall the right way, still contending for the SEC regular season championship. We're a long way to go before we decide who wins that regular season title. And so I think these games give you confidence that if you can go win in Gainesville specifically, you can win anywhere, Knoxville, Fayetteville, wherever. The team and the staff will take it one at a time. But I think as a fan, psychologically, you're in a pretty good spot right now with the next stretch of games coming up.
Come on, Brad. We didn't ask you for an exact score. We just said what you wanted to see.
We'll ask more generically then, because we asked the question yesterday with a couple other guys. With the SEC being as wide open as it is, how many wins do you think wins the SEC?
There you go.
I think the regular season champion – if you tell me they finish 13-5, that's believable.
Okay.
I think 13-5 is believable. I think it could be 12-6. But that's how much balance I think is in this league.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the more wide open years I think we've seen in the SEC. But of course, I think it's everybody's in agreement, Brad, that it's not the SEC from last year. The conference as a whole has taken a step back, but it's still very competitive. I think bracketology says the SEC still has 10 teams getting into the NCAA tournament, which is still very strong.
Oh, it's still very strong. And the way some of these teams are winning, like, I mean, Florida already has two conference losses. They have looked at times to be far and away the best team in the league at times, and they already have two losses. We're not halfway through the schedule. So if they finish with four or five losses, that's believable. Vanderbilt, who has looked unstoppable in its wins, unstoppable. They've already lost three. I mean, Alabama's already got three. Kentucky's got three. Auburn's got three. Texas A&M sitting there 6-1 with the bye this midweek. We'll see what the rest of their schedule looks like. But, you know, teams have already beaten each other up so much that it's hard to see the separation when you look at the various teams in this league. I'm outside of, say, like an LSU or a South Carolina, which have probably looked the worst so far. And Oklahoma's 1-7, which is a little surprising. Maybe those three, maybe the bottom four. As I look at these standings, I go a little more like, well, maybe. But like Texas is 3-5, and all three of their wins have come against ranked teams in the league. They're a quality team. They would be they'd be a problem for somebody in the NCAA tournament, and they're 12th right now in the SEC standings.
Brad, before we let you go, do want to ask you a football question here, as the news has definitely slowed down on that front. But Dallas Walker returning for Auburn, who was able to get that extra year and come back on the defensive side of the football in a position group that I think Auburn fans have shown some concern over the last couple of weeks with guys who may or may not have come back in the transfer portal and things like that. So put into words how important that is to have him returning on the defensive side of the football.
I think interior defensive linemen, you'd love six that you feel good about rotating. And to get to that number, and I don't know if you're there yet or if you got a little ways to go, but it gives you a little more flexibility. Certainly Walker and Cody Sigler and Jordan Crawford and Malik Autry. I mean, those are guys that are going to be foundational pieces of the interior of your defensive line. It gives you another body with experience, gives you a big body to plug holes and stop the running game and, you know, maybe force the quarterback to roll one way or the other, which helps those guys on the edge as opposed to stepping up through the middle. He's strong enough. He can push the pocket back. So, you know, we'll see how many snaps he's able to play. But I'll say this, Auburn's team is better with him on it than it is without him on it in 2026. And so I think it's big from that standpoint.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network with us here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Plug it on, my friend. We mentioned Tiger Talk at the start. You got that going on again tonight. And then a men's basketball broadcast coming up Saturday night in Knoxville.
Yeah, Tiger Talk tonight, 6 o'clock over on Wings 94.3. Baumhauer's Victory Grill on location. Keyshawn Hall and Kevin Overton will be there with us tonight on the show. They're also going to be playing video games in the back at Baumhauer. So if you think you could take on a couple of the Auburn basketball standouts in Fortnite or NBA 2K, come on, let's see. Or you know what, if you just want to watch people give it a shot, do that too. So those guys, in addition to Coach Pearl, that's at 6, women's basketball, 7:45, right here on ESPN 106.7 against South Carolina. And then Saturday, starting at 7 p.m. over on Wings, it's basketball at Tennessee.
We have all of that for you in our family of radio stations here at Auburn Network in conjunction with the Auburn Sports Network. Brad Law, we appreciate you as always, my friend. Enjoy Tiger Talk tonight and then in studio Saturday for you, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So we'll be hunkered down and ready to brave the cold and bring folks another win, hopefully.
Yeah, we appreciate it as always, man. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do it again next Thursday.
You guys, too. Thanks very much. War Eagle.
War Eagle. That's Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, our Thursday 2:30 guest each and every week here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break, come back, wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Just got off the phone with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. And we were talking to him, Christian, about the SEC standings. And, I mean, this is just a cluster, bro. I mean, the fact that, yeah, it's Texas A&M at the top, 6-1 in conference play. But their resume is not all that impressive to me. I mean, wins over LSU, Oklahoma, Mississippi State, and South Carolina, and Texas. Folks, that's the bottom portion of the league. Those are the bottom five teams, I think, by record, right? Oklahoma, LSU, South Carolina, Texas, Mississippi State. Yeah, so five of their six wins are against the bottom five teams of the SEC. The only team not in the bottom five that they beat was Auburn. So maybe we should pump the brakes just a little bit on Texas A&M.
It's almost like that stretch that Auburn has in their final five of six games before Alabama to end the year.
Yeah, I mean, look at what Auburn has when they get through this four-game stretch that we were just talking about. Mississippi State, bottom five team. Kentucky, dang near bottom five team. Oklahoma, bottom five team. Ole Miss, middle of the pack. LSU, bottom five team. And then Alabama. So I think Texas A&M is a good basketball team, but we need more information on the Aggies. I do anyway.
Good thing is that Bucky showed up to his dinner meeting or whatever.
I think it was his radio show.
Was it his radio show? And apologized for showing up late, just like the three-pointer at Auburn.
I'm starting to not like him.
Dog, we've...
Like, dude, that was 3 weeks ago, brother. Like, clearly the win meant more to A&M than it would have meant to Auburn. Because if Auburn won that game, we would not be talking about it. We're not even talking about the loss anymore. We've moved on. But regardless, A&M at the top of the SEC. I'm just saying, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Arkansas is up there at 6-2. Florida's up there at 6-2. Then there's the cluster of three lost teams, right? Vandy, Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Alabama. That's what's crazy about Kentucky. We think they're so bad, and yet they're right there in the middle of it with everybody else.
Yeah, just from that little stretch that they had over Mississippi State, LSU, Tennessee, Texas, and Ole Miss. Right now, you're at the point of these teams that want to have a say in the double bye, or at least a bye and not have to play on Thursday and possibly not Friday, is you cannot afford to lose to the bottom four in the SEC.
No.
When you get that bottom, even the bottom half, you're almost at that point of you cannot afford a bad loss to Mississippi State or to LSU or to Oklahoma. Thankfully, Auburn has those coming up a little bit later on, but weirdly enough, I mean, those are those games that add that much more pressure because you're not going to get praised for winning them, but if you lose, they're going to be detrimental from what you're trying to do in SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Lunardi and his bracketology, this was on Tuesday, so this does not include this week's results. Texas was the last team into the NCAA tournament. Texas is in there. Georgia as an 8 seed. Vandy as a 4. Arkansas as a 5. I'm just kind of reading through this. Tennessee as a 6. You have
Tennessee as a 6 seed is very scary.
Yes, that is very, very scary. Alabama as a 5. Florida as a 4. Looking through some more. Auburn as a 7. Kentucky as a 7. So if you had to pick one of those teams that's in right now, I'm going to put you on the spot. A team that Lunardi says is in the tournament from the SEC that you think will not make the tournament, and a team not in the tournament that you think can make it in. This may be too much of a loaded question.
No, you're good. I got to pull up. I got to pull up schedules really, really quickly here.
Yep. Music's on.
What does Georgia have coming up?
Georgia's
Texas
not a bad
A&M,
pick,
LSU,
yeah.
Florida, Oklahoma. Their stretch at the end is tough. Texas at Vandy, South Carolina, home for Alabama and Mississippi State. I think Texas finds a way to still get hot and make the tournaments. If I had to,
Kentucky, could that be the team as a 7 seed right now for them to completely fall out of the tournament altogether?
Could you imagine? They have Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, Auburn, South Carolina, Vandy.
That might be the answer.
At Vandy, at A&M in Florida.
That's the answer. That's it. Kentucky. That's the team.
Holy cow.
Wow, how about that? All right, there's some spice on the way out for hour number one. Stick around. We got a lot more coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two. You're on the line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this late January afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. And we get started here in hour number two of today's show. If you missed any of the first hour, you can go back and catch up with the podcast version of the show. We take the audio, put it up on our station website for you every single day at ESPNAU.com. For those of you who have the Radio Alabama app, if you don't have it, you need to. But if you do have it, you could check out the Podcast Center there as well. And in the first hour of the show, talked about Auburn beating Texas last night in comeback fashion, 88-82. Talked about how they did it, why they did it, and what they can do moving forward. And then we also talked to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network about that game, SEC standings, and more. All of that was in the first hour of the show. So again, if you missed it, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're talking about Auburn offensively and what the other guys did last night. Again, we've talked a lot about Keyshawn and Tahad, and then it has to be that secondary score. It may get to the point of, could it be Keyshawn and blank? And there's the secondary score there, and then the other five, and you just kind of insert that second player's name, last night that being KO. But we'll have a really cool conversation on that, maybe some quotes on what Stephen Pearl and some of these players talked about in the post game. We'll also dive into the other games in the SEC and in college basketball. Last night, there were a couple really good games. There were a couple of my goodness moments that happened in college basketball last night. Both the Surrender Cobras for You Can't Believe It Happened and the Surrender Cobras for I Cannot Believe That You Just Did That. We'll talk about those before we get with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, to kind of, again, wrap up the conversation that we've had all afternoon and really all week and all season of how wide open this SEC conference is. Who does he think is right now in the forefront to win the SEC? Does he have any teams that are surprising to him? Any underperformers? And then kind of the transfer portal wrap up with college football in there as well. Maybe some winners and some losers from his perspective. So he will join us at 3:30, but all of this coming up here in hour number two. And until 3:30, if you would like to be a part of the conversation, the phone lines are open here right next to us at 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Any thoughts from last night's win over Texas? Any thoughts on what is upcoming for the Auburn Tigers with Tennessee or this 4 or 5 game gauntlet that you continue to run through the middle of the SEC? Again, the phone lines are open. The text box is always open at 334-784-1067. Any quick hitters, any one-line questions that you have that you would like us to answer, or any questions that you have for Chris Gordy that you would like for us to ask him? Again, the text box is always open at 334-784-1067.
Yeah, and so we get underway here in hour number two as we continue talking Auburn basketball. Again, such a big win last night against Texas, and a win that if you just look at the records, right, look at the resumes, it's like, oh, okay, that's a bottom third team is Texas in the SEC. But the fact that their wins, all three of their wins, are against top 25 teams, Auburn should be celebrated for their win last night inside of Neville Arena and should have a ton of confidence going on the road to Tennessee coming up on Saturday. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390, and we get to them now. K-Bag, you're on the line. What's going on, brother? It's good to hear from you.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
We are doing good, my man. What's on your mind?
Is Bucky McMillan becoming the punk of SEC basketball coaches?
He's well on his way, I think. He's not making many friends along the way.
Was he a Bama fan growing up and all the time he spent in Birmingham?
I honestly don't know. Probably. I'm sorry, where'd you say he's from?
Well, how long did he coach at Sanford?
I was hoping you were going instead of Birmingham. I figured you had something else to call it there, K-Bag. But
Birmingham?
There it is.
Of course. I mean, everybody knows what it is.
The way that he responded to comments in the
office is there.
Yeah. And the way that he responded to comments in the post game of after playing Auburn and Neville Arena, said that he had friends here and he always enjoyed his time here. But that being said, he was very, very, very happy to get the win. And I don't know if that was just because of the Aggie jersey he was coaching.
We have people texting us, K-Bag, saying he was absolutely a Bama fan growing up, which, again, I don't know.
Okay.
But
there you go. Zebra doesn't change his stripes, fellas. Hope
that's right.
Today,
yep, appreciate the call, K-Bag. Good to hear from you, my friend. 334-321-1390. Yeah, Bucky McMillan is one of those guys that we talk about in sports. We typically talk about it with players more than we do coaches, right? If they're on your team, you love them. If they're against you, you hate them, right? If they're on the team you're going up against, you just can't stand them. But if they're on your team, man, it's somebody that you would go to battle with. I think Chad Baker Mazzara was that type of player, right, for Auburn on basketball. Where Auburn fans, there was obviously a love-hate relationship at times, but Chad Baker was one that Auburn fans loved having on their team, but he's just a miserable one to go up against, right? Was it Justin Powell? Is that the name I'm thinking of for Auburn? The shooter, right, who came here, had a year, and then went to Tennessee, that guy who's just a sniper, doesn't make a ton of plays, but when he does, you just can't stand it when you're playing against him, right? That type of player. That's how I describe Bucky McMillan, Christian, is I know you were answering a phone call, but I describe him more so as we do with players instead of coaches, but the guy that if he's on your team, you love him. You love him as your head coach, but having to go against that guy, you want to punch him.
Yeah, and the style of basketball doesn't necessarily help because that's
miserable.
It's something that you feel like he's almost tagged and claimed because you call it Bucky Ball, and I'm sure that boosts the ego when it works, and when it doesn't, it's easy to kind of deflect off of.
We get back to the phone lines here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. They're open, 334-321-1390. What's up, old man? What do you want to talk about today?
All over the state, and I listen to you guys, and the conversation in the break rooms and around the campfires last Friday and Saturday night was no one was happy from 7A to 6A to public to private, all these different classifications. And I was hoping you guys could explain that to us old people and some type of happy resolve that everybody walks away from this happy.
Yeah, and the high school landscape, man, it was changed in the state of Alabama last week. And I don't think it's done. I will say that. I don't think that the decision that they came to in the AHSAA, I don't think that will be the final decision. Things are happening that hopefully come to light in the next several days. But, yeah, 7A has been abolished. It is no more. They have gotten rid of that. They have separated, for now, private schools and public schools for fall sports, and they are planning on implementing that across the board. There are now 6 public school divisions and 2 private school divisions. The big private school, the small private school, and then 1 through 6A. For a team like Auburn High, for example, nothing changed other than your 6A, then 7A, still the biggest classification. Our region didn't change. Obviously, teams like Lee Scott and Glenwood got the not even the short end of the stick. They didn't even get the stick. They just took it from them altogether and forced them into regions that just simply don't make sense. They have to compete against teams 3.5 hours away, and now there will be separate postseasons for private schools and for public schools. In fall sports for now, mainly football.
Wow. I just could not believe every conversation when I was kicking the firewood seemed to be from every different classification. So I'm just surprised they didn't call you guys first for final approval.
Yeah.
trust me, I would have a couple of things to say. I mean, I get to travel almost to Tennessee for every single away game next year if everything stands.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you at least breaking it down for us less than intelligent people with the Cliff Note version of that. So thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Appreciate you tuning in and being a part of the show. Old man, got him on the phone lines here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And, yeah, that is, again, an ongoing situation in the state of Alabama right now with high school sports. And I hate it, man. Again, I'm very happy for Auburn High, selfishly, that nothing changed other than selfishly. I hate 7A not being a thing. That just carries a little bit more weight because it's a bigger number. It really, that's the only difference for me, is the idea that it's 6A instead of 7A.
Right.
But nothing really changed for us in that matter.
Right.
But it changed for a lot of other public schools because now the belief is they won't schedule private schools because you don't get any advantage.
There's no benefits, and then
other than just filling a game on your schedule.
Right, but for private schools, it could do more harm than good if you get another loss to your resume, and all of a sudden that kicks you down the line of private schools. And when you're looking at the 2A private school classification, Lee Scott is 13th of 15 in terms of size. So there's teams in Lee Scott's region that competed in 5A football last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conglomerate of, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1A schools.
Yeah, and then in region, or in the 1A classification, I know that there's a bunch of other schools, and I've been hearing about it, and I know that I mentioned it with you as well, mm-hmm. and that was kind of the very, very generic terminology that we were at least guided to use, but when you go to AL.com, there is an article that's titled Open Hearts and Open Minds. It says that private school leaders are set to meet after AHSAA's reconstructing decision. So that is what I will say right now. But whether that is tomorrow or Monday, there may or may not be news from what we have been hearing.
Hopefully something does change, because the decision
they came to was just
abysmal. I mean, I honestly don't understand how this was the decision. By the way, a vote, right? This was a vote. This was voted on. This wasn't one person saying, this is my story and I'm sticking to it. This was a group of people, the board at the 15. AHSAA.
Yeah, 15 people after kicking it down the road for months.
Where the general feeling going into said vote was, this was not going to happen.
Yeah, they talked about, there could be a couple teams that jump from 5 to 6A, or maybe a team or two that drops from 4A to 3A.
Which happens every time they do the reconstruction, every 2 years.
Which is what should happen.
But them voting for this was just
13-2 in favor of.
Yeah.
After having to postpone it again and kick it down the road for months because of the lack of agreement, or the inability to feel like you could mutually decide on one of these agreements. And so, yes, so we believe, and I guess now this article, if you choose to go and read it, which is all that we will really dive into now, there is planning on being a meeting with a bunch of private school leaders and the AHSAA after their decision to basically reconstruct all of private school and public school and everything on that side of things.
Someone texted in and said that there was no thinking of the student-athletes in minds of the adults in the room, which is absolutely correct.
I know that this is not what we're spending the entire show on, but we've talked about this so much off-air, and man, you forget, and TP brought a really good point up. TP Hammock, again, with the AHS-FHS that we had on last Friday, a good buddy of mine that I was able to graduate with and keep up with him, and he keeps up with me and provides me scores on it just about every single Friday about updating, just so that way we can look at our text message and see everything. But not only are these just high school kids that are going to have to leave class early, that have to go and travel and spend so much time on the bus, these coaches and leaders are teachers, mm-hmm. they're parents, they are volunteers that don't receive a paycheck for any of this. And if you do, now that you add 3.5 hours of travel on Friday nights, possibly for Lee Scott or Glenwood specifically, with Lee Scott having to go to Birmingham and Huntsville and Glenwood having to go down to Mobile, where, again, they don't even get the stick. They didn't even have a seat at the kids' table for Thanksgiving. It was more of, you can go sit outside and do whatever you need to do. It ruins everything on that side of things. And then what is it that makes high school athletics great? We see this every single Friday night in football. We see this every single weekday and weekend when we call basketball and baseball. But it is the ideology of, man, these kids know each other. These kids grew up together. These kids have played against each other since they're 8 years old, and now they're in high school, and every single fan of both teams come to this stadium. They come to this arena. They come to wherever to watch these two teams play and create a high school environment. That is what you hear about in high school sports, of how it's supposed to be that community-based rivalry of, man, we're going to hate each other for the 60 minutes or the 48 minutes, rather, in high school football, or the 32 minutes in basketball. But once everything is said and done, maybe not this way for everything, but it's the ability to shake hands and still call each other's brothers and sisters and friends. And obviously there's some rivalries that are a little bit more heated than others, but you have that community feel and the ability to hold a standard and hold the flag over your rival's head for 364 days of, look what we just did, you have to wait until next year to try and beat us again. The community high school environment, man, there's not going to be fans that travel to away games that are 3.5 hours away on a Friday night because parents aren't going to be able to, coaches aren't going to be able to, and while though selfishly that may make it better for what we do for road games and fans listening, but man, that makes it miserable if you're one of six fans that are able to stand on the opposing sidelines while the other home team goes and plays you and there's absolutely no history, there's no connection, there's no connectivity or anything. It just feels like you're playing another random opponent on a Friday night.
Yeah, I don't totally Whew. Understand where they came up that with all nice. Of this. Someone texted in just now. We got to get to break. They said, public school lifer here. And the 13-2 vote is an accurate reflection of how the state feels. If private schools want it their way with their rules, they can go to the AISA or to Burger King. So this is someone who disagrees with us and agrees with how they did vote, with saying that the state, a lot of people across the state feel. And I think this is in reference to the recruiting argument.
Yeah, the private school
for private schools,
school.
Which is legit. That's it a legitimate is. Thing. The fact that private schools, right, talking athletics versus school and kind of how they blend together, private schools do have that opportunity to go and get kids who can move in, who don't have to live in the district, and can decline and deny kids for access, right? Public schools can't do that. Not saying public schools don't recruit, because they clearly do, but private schools have no restrictions when it comes to that. So, I don't know. It's fascinating because I have not heard many people agreeing with the decision, but this person does. Saying sure. If private schools want it their way and by their rules, they can go back to the AISA, which is the Alabama Independent School Association.
So you're saying that there's issues in the NFL, now there's issues in college football. No way that there's issues in high school football or anything. I mean, no way there's disagreements on how things are done and how every single decision just
yeah.
affects everybody, right?
Another person texted in response to that and says it's a big middle finger to the private schools, saying they're the problem, so put them in their own division, which, you know, that's how some people feel. So others don't. It's an ongoing issue, though, no doubt about it.
And I would just love...
I just think the vote caught people off guard.
Yes, and that... And
at
it
least the result.
And it almost came, I guess, from us, and I speak on this a little bit more from the Lee Scott perspective of, it doesn't feel like there was any sort of clarity on why the decision was made or why anything. It almost gave, like, the referee response of, this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. For competitive balance and for this.
Yeah,
okay,
deal with it.
Okay, bye. And yeah. You only do two A regions when Montgomery is a possibility with Lee Scott and Glenwood, the Mobile regions could be a region, as well as Birmingham and Huntsville. So I would love to know where two regions came. Again, so many questions that you hope will continue to be answered before football season. We do have clarification for the fall sports when it comes to volleyball and – oh, gosh, there's one other. There are different areas for, like, the little midweek games, which does change things.
Which would make sense.
A little bit, since yeah. football's at least the biggest and on Friday nights. So that at least makes it a little bit better from the standpoint of, like, a Tuesday night area volleyball game where you don't have right. to travel – Yeah. 3 hours north or 3 hours south.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama going on with the high school stuff here in the state of Alabama. But you know who else? Another state, because a buddy of mine, again, we've blown way past the break. And look at old man sparking a big conversation for us here in hour number two. I have a buddy, one of my best friends growing up, was in his wedding last summer or last fall. Again, probably my best friend. He works with the Illinois High School Athletic Association, the IHSAA. He works for them, and so he's all up in all this type of stuff, and he saw the decision. I mean, people across the country are talking about the decision that Alabama made. He sent me a text the other day.
I was going to say, was he...
He was shocked. He was shocked. He couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe that it happened. Again, they were talking about this in Illinois. He lives about 45 minutes out of Chicago.
Well, tell you what, while you find that... Let's take what we need to take.
Yeah, we should probably do that. We'll read that text. Also, a quote from Alex Golish about Alabama, which is just fascinating, about Bediako. It's hilarious. More on that. We'll take a break, come back, and continue whatever this conversation is right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back after taking our mandatory break here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And several conversations have been sparked at the same time. And kind of circling back to the whole high school athletics decision in the state of Alabama, told you I had a buddy who works in the IHSAA, the Illinois High School Athletic Association. He does sales and stuff up there for them. When the decision came through from the AHSAA, he sent me a text, and he said, crazy news coming out of Alabama with the public-private school split. He said, a case study on this, if just looking for an example, he said, a state that's already done that is Texas. He said that the Texas public school division is 10 times bigger than the Texas private school division, and said it's a crazy move. He said, we hear people crying about the private school advantage all the time up here. He says, our office does not want to split, and it was a big talking point, the fact that Alabama did it. So if you think this is a local thing, I mean, it's making waves across all the high school athletic associations in the United States. And someone else sent us a text. Again, text box is open, 334-784-1067. We're about to get to another break. Chris Gordy joins us next. Someone says, put them in their own division, talking about the private schools. Putting them in their own division is one thing, but to not put Lee Scott and Glenwood in the same region is just downright spiteful. And that's correct. The fact that two teams who are each other's biggest rivals, it's the Auburn Opelika of that division, Lee Scott
from,
Glenwood.
Yeah, from the AISA, you move up to the AHSAA together.
And you're 45 minutes apart, and you're not going to compete against one another? It doesn't get more stupid than that.
I've gotten all but confirmation that they would still find a way to play, but
I would hope so.
But it wouldn't have any sort of implications.
Auburn Opelika used to be when they were in separate leagues, separate divisions. When Auburn was 7A and Opelika was 6A, you could still play. It just doesn't have the postseason implications.
Whack.
Stupid. That's the word I use.
Sure.
Or stupid, as some would
say. Ooh. S-H-T-O-O-P-I-T.
Yeah. What I was referencing, by the way, in the media availability for Alex Golish today down at the Senior Bowl, Auburn head football coach, someone asked him about the Charles Bediako situation in the G League just for fun. He said, yeah, but how'd it work out for him last weekend?
And the first response was, they won their last game, and he said, and smiled.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good. Welcome to Auburn, Alex Golish. You've picked it up quite nicely, sir.
We'll gain some fans.
Very much so. We'll talk to Chris Gordy about that and a whole lot more right after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And we get to our second guest of the day, one of our longest-running guests here on the show. Thursdays at 3:30, they are written in stone for Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast. My man, it is good to talk to you. Hope everything is good in your world. And were you guys affected by any of this weather or anything rolling through over there in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, we got the cold weather. We just luckily avoided snow and power outages and all that. But, yeah, it was pretty brutal here. It was a Sunday morning and then Monday morning. I mean, below, sub-freezing when you got to get out there and wrap your pipes. We don't do that here in the South.
Yeah, it's been nasty, man. And Nashville, I think, is still, tens of thousands of people without power in Nashville, Tennessee. So some wild stuff. So good to hear that you guys didn't get the nasty stuff, just a little bit of the cold. But, and the SEC heating up, man. I don't know what to do or say about this conference because it's as wide open as maybe it's ever been or has been in recent years. I mean, we're 7-8 games in to the SEC basketball schedule. What have you seen from certain teams, certain players, good and bad so far in college basketball?
Well, what surprises me has been the blowouts. I mean, there have been, it feels like there's been more blowouts this year than ever in SEC basketball play. And I'll say the teams that are bad are really bad. I mean, LSU and Oklahoma are as bad as it gets. Now, Oklahoma has played some competitive games, but still, they've lost, I want to say, I think it's 7 in a row. And LSU's just getting manhandled. I mean, they've got fans leaving at halftime because they're down 25, and it's like, well, we're not coming back. So the teams that are bad are really bad. A&M has been impressive so far. Bucky Ball with their new coach. They're sitting atop the SEC. I will say, I think it's a little bit of fool's gold because, you know, I think they've played, you know, their fair share of the bad teams in the conference. They haven't played Bama yet. They haven't played Vandy. They haven't played, you know, even Kentucky, who's kind of mid, but is always tough. So I think A&M's schedule is going to get a little bit tougher here real soon. But, you know, A&M and Arkansas both won 3 in a row. Cal and Arkansas seem to be figuring it out. This freshman that they have is so fun to watch. He's such a dynamic scorer. But if we're talking about the hottest team in the SEC, it's Auburn. You know, I haven't won 4 in a row, and I think they're starting to gel. I think they're starting to learn a little bit something about themselves, and that's good to see because a couple weeks ago, this thing was looking pretty bleak for Stephen Pearl.
Yeah, we were almost in the standpoint that you and the LSU Tigers are of, man, just waiting for mid-February, late February for baseball season to get started. Then all of a sudden, a 4-game win streak, you feel like you figured a couple of things out. When you look at this Auburn team, Chris, what's been the most surprising thing to you of how they've changed and how much better they've gotten over these past couple of months?
Yeah, they seem to have figured out some good rotations. They're getting, it seems like, some better bench play. You know, it always starts with rebounds and making your free throws. Those will always exponentially help your, help your chances to win. And, you know, not taking volume threes, being selective, but taking threes when you feel good about, get a good look and you get a good shot. So, and it feels like defensively that they've come around from a little bit of where they were earlier in the year. So, again, still a long way to go. I mean, I'll say this. I mean, I think there's no doubt the SEC is down this year from, you know, where they were last year. And we kind of knew that was coming when we saw the non-conference play and how much, how much teams were struggling in non-con play. So you kind of had a premonition, but you know, somebody asked me the other day, how many teams does the SEC get in? I don't know. We'll determine that in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, somebody asked me, does Bama get some of these wins negated with Charles Bediako playing? I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, don't put anything past the NCAA at the end of the day. But, yeah, I think they'll be okay. I still think Tennessee's good. I think Bama's still good. Florida's, you know, flexed their muscles at times still as the reigning champs. So I still think there's some good teams that can go on runs. You know, even Mississippi State I like, man. Chris Jans is a heck of a coach, and to be doing what they're doing there has been impressive as well.
Well, Chris, since we didn't have you on last week, we haven't had a chance to talk to you about the Charles Bediako situation. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked.SEC podcast on the phone lines. Your take on, A, the idea that it happened, and B, the idea that it's still going on. And conveniently, Chris, the hearing has been moved to the day before Auburn-Alabama plays in basketball. Your thoughts on this entire chaos that's happening?
Well, you say conveniently. If it was convenient, they would have moved it to the day after. But
true.
Yeah, I think. I mean, look, it's stupid. It's silly. Nobody in their right mind outside of Tuscaloosa thinks this is the right decision. But the NCAA created this dumbassery. I mean, when you let you let guys playing European ball come over here and be fully eligible for college, okay. I mean, that's technically, Euro ball is professional. You're playing for a professional league and getting paid a paycheck. Mm-hmm. But then to come over here, I mean, the G League is pro ball. I had somebody trying to reason with me saying it's minor league ball. Oh, you know, in baseball, they let guys go get drafted to an MLB team and go play in the minors and then come back and play college football. Well, one, that's two different sports, but two, it's also that's minor leagues. The G League, you know, when you get signed to a two-way deal, those paychecks Charles Petiako caught said San Antonio has Spurs on it. Like, he was getting paid by a professional league. So I think this is absolute stupidity to say, oh, no, that's minor league ball. You should be allowed to go back to college. No, once you declare for the draft, and I know he went undrafted, but you declared for the draft and went through the whole process and then signed on with different teams. Like, you're a pro. You don't get to go back to college. But they opened Pandora's box with the kid at Baylor and a few other kids. Only been a handful of kids, but it's enough that it started creating. Look, I was told there were teams around college basketball last week calling around to guys in the G League saying, hey, what's your NIL price? What would it take to get you over here? I mean, luckily the spring semester has started up for most schools, so it would be really difficult to get a kid in now. But somebody brought up to me Oregon. They're on the quarter system. Their classes don't start till the first week of February. So, technically, if Oregon wants to go try to poach a G League guy, I guess they could at this point.
Well, they need it, man. That Oregon team is just decimated with injuries, and it's been so funny and comical, Chris, to see so many former college players posting on their Instagram and things, and it's like, hey, I'm up, I'm available, I'm free, I'm not doing anything, I've been running at the Y, man, I'm still in shape, and it really is a disaster to see what that has become. But you mentioned Pandora's box, and that's been opened in college football too, with some tampering things going on, as Dabo Swinney got himself in front of a microphone and, of course, raised hell, as he typically does. But it sounds like he was onto something, and he was right when he called out Ole Miss for tampering with a Clemson Tiger. Well, someone else has jumped into the equation. Fresno State says, hey, they tampered with our players too. Our leading receiver, they are claiming that an Ole Miss staffer was texting him before he entered the portal. They said, quote, we have receipts. Have you seen this story today as Fresno State jumps in on the Ole Miss tampering allegations?
Yeah, I mean, the ironic thing about it is a month ago, Ole Miss players were crying, or Ole Miss people were crying bloody murder. Lane Kiffin's trying to take our players, as if that was anything new from what we've seen all offseason from current coaches taking the majority of their prior team with them to their new team. I mean, heck, nobody said a word when Kurt Cignetti brought half the damn James Madison team up to Indiana, but hey, teams have worked out. They just won a national championship. But, you know, I get it. People hate Lane Kiffin, and so Ole Miss was screaming bloody murder, but the ironic part is they were doing it themselves behind closed doors. And, you know, I think it's going to come out that, yes, they were doing things that were not allowed. But the Ole Miss retort seems to be, well, everybody's doing it. Okay, great. It's the same thing if you're, you know, it's like the, I don't know, when you see a store get looted and you just run and grab stuff and you run out and you go, well, what about those other guys? Still didn't make what you did right. Like, it still is against the rules. But the reality of this is, okay, Ole Miss may get busted, and the NCAA may come down and go, we have found you guilty of tampering. What's the punishment going to be? You know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a level two, punishment. What, they're going to pay a fine and move on? I mean, you want to suspend Pete Golding for the first half against Louisville in the opener? Okay, fine. I'm sure they'll take that. So, at the end of the day, nothing significant is going to happen from this. So, again, I just think it's much ado about nothing. But as somebody said, at least Dabo doing this, it's going to call attention to it, so sure, at least maybe this will crack down on a little bit of it moving forward. But I don't know, man. It still is. It's the Wild Wild West out there, and I think it's not going to slow down.
A slap on the wrist, or, you know, the luxury tax in the MLB that every single SEC team will be perfectly fine paying every single year to get everybody that they want. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us on the phone lines, as he is every single Thursday at 3:30. And Chris, with the transfer portal wrapping up, you feel like most of these teams have gotten just about all of their names. There could be a couple more players that continue to trickle in to these SEC programs over the next couple of weeks, but the majority of the work has been done. Who are some of these surprising teams that you feel like did a really nice job in the transfer portal for 2026?
Yeah, I mean, the first and foremost, it's Lane Kiffin and LSU. I mean, they, you know, and it was capped off last Friday. They got Jordan Seaton, the big offensive tackle from Colorado, who should pencil in right at left tackle for them, projecting the blind side for Sam Levitt. So, you know, Lane did a good job, but we kind of knew, right? I mean, the last 2 years, he was deemed the portal king at Ole Miss. This past year, LSU and Brian Kelly had the number one portal class, so it only made sense. Lane Kiffin plus LSU is going to equal the number one portal class just about every year. So that wasn't a surprise. I was surprised by Ole Miss from a standpoint of, man, they did one, a good job of locking down so many of their starting players to return next year. They did that before their season even ended and then still went out and killed it in the portal. And part of this, I think, is Pete Golden trying to save face and wanting to, you know, make a big splash to impress the fan base before he even coaches a full season as head coach. But, you know, I thought they did a good job of adding a lot of really nice pieces. You know, and then there's the ones where, you know, the Auburns had a bunch of USF guys who are obviously super talented, but how does that transition work? And again, we see the Cignetti model of the James Madison guys actually played really well and developed into good Big Ten players. I mean, that dude Pons that in the secondary, I mean, like he could play on any team in the SEC or anywhere in the country. You know, that will be very interesting. I had somebody asking me about that the other day, Byron Brown. How does he translate to the SEC? I think he's going to be just fine. But over the course of a SEC schedule, wear and tear, how much does that, you know, hurt Auburn as the year goes along? We're going to find out. But, you know, outside of that, I mean, it's everybody kind of supplemented and added some good pieces here and there. I thought, you know, Florida had a nice portal class. You know, Alabama added a couple good pieces here and there. I was a little surprised Georgia only added 9 players. Yeah, I think that just kind of shows how good Kirby's recruited the last few years, and they've done a good job of keeping those pieces that they continue to develop in-house. But you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you won the portal in January. It matters if you could get these guys in, develop them, and create chemistry, because LSU is a prime example. They had the number one portal class last year at this time, but Brian Kelly didn't develop them, and they didn't have the coaching to get it done.
Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC, man. We appreciate you, as always, taking the time on Thursday afternoons. We're approaching a 4-year anniversary, my friend, that you've been a part of this program, so cannot stress and thank you enough for your time each and every week. And we look forward to doing it again this time next week. But before you go, plug it all. Tell the people what you got going on in a very busy time around the SEC.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. We had a good conversation a couple days ago with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, joined us. Also did a fun interview last Friday with Phil Fulmer, the former Tennessee coach, giving some fun SEC stories of the past. And, yeah, it's exciting to hit our 4-year anniversary. I will send you some Sidney Sweeney lingerie to celebrate.
Oh God! All right, I'll send you my I'll send you Christian's address. You can send it there, and he'll may or may not bring it back to the station, my man. Hey, we appreciate you as always, Chris. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll do it again next Thursday.
All right, fellas, thanks.
Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC, man. Check it out wherever you get your podcast, and you never know what you're gonna get when he hops on the phone lines.
There had to be something because he couldn't make fun of Auburn today.
He can't. He physically can't do it right now. They're the hottest team in the SEC, and the baseball team is a top 10, top 5 team in preseason. And football's got a new coach. You can't make fun of him yet. So, yeah, I mean, it hurts him. Auburn is, what's the word I'm looking for? They're
back, baby.
That's not where I was going. Nope, not at all. But I'll tell you where we are going to break. We'll be right back. We'll wrap up the Thursday edition of the show right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes as we have had a great show today, man. We've had a ton of fun talking Auburn basketball. Their win against Texas last night. Two great guests on the show. Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network in Hour 1. Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Just got off the phone with him. And some high school conversations about the AHSAA decision and how it could change tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes. So a lot of great conversations, good phone calls, text messages as well. So we appreciate everybody engaging with the show as you do every day. So we appreciate that. But if you missed any of the show, go check it out in the podcast version on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
I almost said here in hour number 2, but no, here wrapping up the show, rather, while we have a little bit of time. Did want to shout out while we have just a minute. We got to talk with former Lee Scott Warrior, former Georgia Bulldog, Mr. Davis Thompson, on the PGA Tour, who got his career, or got his year started, rather, last weekend, and I think shot 8-under and didn't make the cut on Sunday because it was a three-day, three-day cut. So wild to think that you shoot 8-under and aren't good enough to play for half the field with Scotty winning it, going, what, 27 under par, whatever
yeah,
the case
did.
It was. But Mr. Davis Thompson on the leaderboard here on day one. He is 6-under through 12. They're playing at Torrey Pines.
It's mine.
The eyes that I just got from Mr. Goins thinking that that was my computer
stupid
playing
ads,
an ad.
Bro. Auto-playing ads, man, on websites need to be abolished. They need to be gotten rid of. I was pulling up women's basketball scores on the worldwide leader in sports, and they decided to play me a car ad.
Good thing you're not in the market or anything.
It's like it knows. It's almost like it listens.
But
crazy?
Davis Thompson, 6-under through 12, and so anytime that we can show a former Lee Scott Academy Warrior some love, we definitely will. And speaking of the Lee Scott Warriors and giving them some love, we're on tonight on Tiger Country 104.5, Lee Scott Varsity Girls and Varsity Boys Basketball. It is senior night, so we get to celebrate all of the seniors that have helped build this footprint from the AISA to the AHSAA. It's going to be a really fun night, Lee Scott and Locha Poca. The Varsity Girls play at 5:15. We'll go on air right around 5 o'clock to talk about the one senior for the Varsity Girls and the nine seniors for the Lee Scott Varsity Boys. These teams are playing really, really good basketball right now. The Varsity Girls are 15-8 or 15-9, I believe. The Varsity Boys are 20-3. And for the Varsity Girls for Lee Scott, we will wait until Monday morning where there will be a coin flip between Lee Scott and Glenwood to see who will host the area tournament. I believe that's, again, at 9:30 on Monday morning. But there is no drama on the boys' side of things. Sanford Gymnasium will host the boys' area tournament. And so it would be really, really awesome for 2 years in the AHSAA for there to be four essentially area tournaments inside of Sanford Gymnasium in the first 2 years for Lee Scott Academy. So should be a lot of fun again, Tiger Country 104.5. I'm heading there here as soon as we get off air. Should be a lot of fun here tonight.
Yeah, and then here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn women's basketball, late tip tonight, 8 o'clock start, 7:45 pregame begins with our buddy Brent Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network as South Carolina, the third-ranked team in women's basketball, comes into Neville Arena. So radio broadcast will be right here on ESPN 106.7.
A perfect test for year one Larry Vickers. I mean, you're playing really good basketball. What more could you ask for to get and see where you're at in the SEC and in the country?
I was asked in our text box, do we have heads or tails on the coin flip?
Davis McIsaac, who joined me on the call on Friday, said always tails. So
see, tails never fails is what I grew up on. But it fails a lot, so I always go heads.
Would you say that it fails 50% of the time?
Somewhat, yeah. Believe it or not, I'm going heads on the coin flip, so we'll see. But we're out of time. We gotta go.
Regardless, we won it.
Yeah, you pick one side, I pick the other. We can't be wrong. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.